Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs. I'm also an admirer of entrepreneurial stories. I was on Indie Hackers and saw that this guy who you're about to meet, Chris Oliver, posted that he earned over $1 million with his online business. And he's a guy who used to work as a developer, did well, had this big issue, and then decided, I'm going to start my own company. And the one thing that he could start off with was, said, you know what? I don't know everything, but I know a little bit more than people who are further behind me. I'll just teach that. And so he started Go Rails, where people can learn Ruby on Rails. And then after that, he said, you know, there are other tools, other services, other things I could provide my audience, my customers, people who are drawn to my work. And so one of those tools that he created is called Hatchbox. It allows you, it's basically Ruby on Rails hosting. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then Jumpstart Rails, that's Ruby on Rails SaaS templates. So he's got his niche. He's doing really well in it. And he's got such an interesting story. I invited him here to talk about how he did it. And we're sponsored by a brand new sponsor, SEMrush. I'm so freaking proud that we've got them. They're going to let you guys use their software for free. All you have to do is, well, there's a promo code, but you know what? If you go to mixergy.com/SEMrush, you'll get to use it. And also Delighted, which will allow you to check in with your audience and get a sense of whether they like your work or not, whether they're willing to share it or not. And I'll let you use their software for free too if you go to delighted.com/mixergy first. Chris, good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You did really well. What's one thing that you bought when you were a developer before you started out on this entrepreneurial journey that we're going to talk about?
So I bought a Mini Cooper, like the fastest, you know, maxed out everything. And that was like the gift to myself when I was like, you know, making money.
Mini Cooper Go. What is it about this Mini Cooper that drew you?
Actually, it turned out that like my mom bought one and I always thought they were kind of dumb and tiny and whatever. But then I drove it to my aunt's one weekend and I got a speeding ticket in it right away that same day. And I was like, you know, this thing is actually a lot of fun because it's so small. It's really good in the corners. And it turned out that there's kind of a big club. So on the weekends, my parents have one. My parents have a couple. I have three Mini Coopers and I have three now.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we have a local group that gets together and does drives on the weekends. And then the company organizes a cross-country road trip every couple of years. So we do that too. And it's a blast. There's like, wow. Last time we went, there was like 1400 Mini Coopers meeting in Colorado from coast to coast. We drove, you know, and met in Colorado. It's crazy, like fun thing to do.
I always wanted to do a cross country drive. And are you doing it for speed or taking your time and actually getting to see things?
They organized the trip. So we drove down to Orlando and then drove across to Texas and up to Colorado with like 400 other cars every single day. And they're taking us to racetracks and things and putting on these little events every day. One morning we started where all the cars pulled up on a runway in the airport. And we were able to like take these pictures of our cars on, you know, an actual runway and everything. And there's lots of cool things that they put together for that. It's a lot of fun.
I can see how that would be a proud moment. You get to buy your first car brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, we custom ordered it. They built it in England and then you got to watch the process and wait for it to ship over to the US and whatever. It was a lot of fun.
And still you're not working at the company that helped you earn the money to do it because, well, how many hours a day did you work back then?
Oh man, I was working like 14 hours a day sometimes, you know, consulting and doing work for other companies that were bringing, they were designing things like Facebook apps or whatever, and we were building it for them. And it was not super fun.
You told our producer, not only was I working 14 hours a day, but there was one day when somebody smashed, what did they smash?
Yeah, I was working late. Our office wasn't in a great part of town. And so I came out, it was dark and come out there and something's wrong. And there's all this glass everywhere. And I look and it's like, yeah, my car's window is broken into. Wow. And they rifled through it. And I don't think there was anything in there, but they, you know, broke in anyways. And that was like really frustrating to like, I'm working 14 hours a day, busting my butt to build these apps. And then my, you know, car gets broken into and I don't really get any, like anything but a paycheck out of that. And it was just really frustrating.
Not only that, even though your car, which now I understand your connection and affection for your cars, gets broken into, you have a deadline. Did you finish the deadline despite all this extra work and the headache of dealing with your car? You did.
Mm-hmm.
And then your boss does what?
The client told my boss that it was the best project or best thing that they'd ever worked on some other team with. And I did, you know, 100% of the work. And they actually were asking us to do stuff that I didn't even know. So that's why it was so hard. I was teaching myself all this stuff, trying to build mobile apps that I'd never done before. And I didn't even know if it was any good. So to get that feedback that it was the best thing that they had ever done, that was really good. But then, you know, my car gets broken into, we complete the project and my boss goes out to LA to party with the clients. And they tell me about this after they get back. And I'm like, wait a minute, this doesn't add up. Like, what do I get out of this?
Another 14 hour day.
Yeah.
And so you told our producer, that was your breaking point. That was it. This was the breaking point. And in order to leave, you said I had to use scorched earth techniques. Why?
I have a, you know, a tendency I know in myself to do the safe thing. So mm-hmm. a lot of times that up until then I was working on stuff on the side. I'd go to work and then in the evenings and weekends I'd work on my own ideas. But I would always do whatever I was comfortable with, which was just building stuff, never talking to people or customers or anything. And so when I decided to quit, I realized like I'm going to have to go force myself to do those things that I don't want to do, that I'm not comfortable doing. And so I had to basically burn the bridges and I quit consulting and said, I'm going to figure something out. And now the clock's ticking. Like my bank account is shrinking.
You didn't have a business in mind, didn't have a next step. You just said, I've got to force myself to leave.
When I quit the consulting job, I went on to consult on my own and I did that for a little while and it was basically the same thing. I just made a little bit more money because I was doing it myself and charging the same rates that they were at that last job, but I get all of that money.
Yeah.
And then I quit consulting on my own after I had built up a bit of savings. Like I was making good enough money to buy that car and to make some savings. So then I, you know, decided it's done. Like, I hate this work. It's not worth the money that I'm making out of it because I don't spend it. I'm saving it, whatever. Like, it wasn't fulfilling. So that's when I realized I need to do something else. And I spent a little time with a friend of mine and he was working on a project and we started to make a little Facebook app to help get reviews for his iOS apps.
Okay.
And friends. And I got to watch him build a little product and, you know, make some money that way. And I realized that's the first time I've ever made a dollar without trading my time for it. I was always consulting or working full time for someone else where they're paying for my time basically. And that was a really great opportunity to see, like, I'll go into the movie theater, get a notification on my phone that you made $25. Oh, this movie's free. And I didn't do anything for it. And that was like, I gotta go do something else. That was a really like great moment to have that felt inspiring because I had never done that before. And it was good.
And the idea for Go Rails came from you saying, you know what? I know enough to teach someone who is like me about 4 years ago, 4 years before I learned all this stuff on my own, right?
Yeah. So I had been blogging about development stuff that if I found anything that I couldn't find the answer to quickly on Google, when I did figure it out, I'd write a blog post about it. So I bought a domain, gorails.com, and decided to put those blog posts over on gorails.com so that, you know, Google and everything is going to index that higher than my own personal domain because it's got Rails in the name and everything. So I started writing on there, and that was getting a little bit of traffic, but it was just a side thing. So when I quit consulting, I decided maybe I can take this traffic on that site and turn it into a product. So I decided maybe I'll make screencasts. And that's kind of the initial idea that led into trying to make a course at the beginning, which turned into weekly screencasts.
The thing that I keep thinking when I hear about your story is I've interviewed people who created coding courses. I've seen them online. There are tons of them. I'm going to interview. I've got someone coming up soon. There are lots of them. Why did you say I've got something different? I can make money here when there's so many other people.
Well, I just needed anything that could make money at the time. I just needed to get my foot in the door somehow. So that inspiration for that was really Railscasts, which was a guy who was making screencasts a few years before who quit and kind of disappeared from the internet. But I learned everything from him. Like I watched every single video of his probably multiple times, and he had quit about a year and a half earlier, and I really missed it. And a lot of other people did too. I was really craving to have that, you know, product again. And I thought maybe I've learned enough that I could teach a few things like he has. And that was kind of where I figured there's a gap in the market because I really wish I could continue paying for this, but it no longer exists.
Okay. Let me take a moment to talk about my first sponsor. I'm so excited. I've got a brand new sponsor. And then we'll come back and figure out how you got your first customers and also the difficulty of creating that first course. Everyone says, just create, just teach. It's not that hard, but it's harder than people who I interview make it out to be. All right. I'm really excited. SEMrush is a new sponsor. Do you do any content marketing or do you use software to help you figure out what to do?
I don't right now, but I've definitely considered it and I probably should be.
You know what? When SEMrush came to be a customer of mine, I went to my audience and I said, if you have any positive experiences, let me know. And this one woman said, Andrew, please don't use my name, but here's the thing. I said, I know my audience. I just started creating articles for my audience. And then I hired people who helped me create articles for my audience. And we just did it based on what we thought was right, what we thought was good, what we loved, because we were our audience. And she said, but when we analyzed it, we realized we weren't making enough money from it. And she's making money from advertising. I didn't think there was still money to be made from advertising. I thought it's all just converted into, it's all about converting into selling your product. She is. She told me I'm just doing really well. Probably why she doesn't want me to mention her name. But she said, look, the problem we had was a lot of what we loved wasn't actually generating traffic. And she said, once I started paying, say, $300 even to get somebody to write an article, I had to analyze and say, are we getting $300 worth of value from this? And we weren't. And SEMrush helped her just quickly see that. And so once she started using SEMrush to figure out what should she write about, what does she care about and her audience is still searching for, then she stopped wasting money on articles that weren't being read and started leveling up and getting articles that drew in enough traffic to more than pay for the writers. I have tons of examples of people who've done the exact same thing. And I could tell you that it's about search engine optimization. But I'll tell you that it's grown beyond that. Yes, it's so simple that one of the people in my audience said, here's a video I created for virtual assistants. They are now creating the basic content. She said, look, there's a thing we want to create an article about. We see who else has created similar articles. And you can see in the screencast she created for her people, she's walking them through understanding that, well, look, this article is not very good. Look at how much better we could do it. This article is not very good. Look at what we could bring to it. And now by seeing the competitive articles for the terms that she's trying to rank for, she can create better articles. Anyway, but it's more than just search engine optimization. It's also about content marketing, about social media. They've got all these tools where if you want to earn traffic, earn eyeballs, create stuff that people want to see, share, and read, they've got these tools that will let you do it. But you know what? I'm not even going to try to sell you guys on it. I'm just going to tell you that if you want to use it, they're letting me, you, and you, Chris, you should do it. You're going to love this. They're going to let you just try it for free. You don't have to pay anything for it. You don't even have to put a credit card in. I went in, I double checked it to make sure there's no credit card required. You just get to go and experience it. It's so fast. You just tell them your name and email address. They want to make sure that you don't have an account. If you do have an account, they won't let you have this deal. But if you don't have an account, they're not just going to give you their software. They're going to give you the guru version of their software, which has all, oh, you know what? It's the best level available to us right now. All you have to do is go to, they couldn't even create this URL fast enough for me. I just created Redirect. If you need this, if you want this, if you're curious about how to create stuff that people love, here's the URL that will let you use their software for free, limited time. They're just testing me to see if this ad will convert for them. All you have to do is go to Mixergy.com/SEMrush. Mixergy.com, Mixergy.com/SEMrush. All right. I feel like that's exactly where you are right now. You're at a place where, Chris, you are creating a lot of the work yourself, and we're going to get into the headaches in that. And now you're starting to think, how do I optimize? How do I organize? How do I systemize? But let's get back to the first course. How long did it take you to create the first course? What'd you even put into that course?
Oh, that first course was easily 3 or 4 months. Wow. Just to get through making 5 or 15 videos. It was really tough because as a developer, all of the work that you do is in your own head. You're thinking through these problems and looking up, trying to think of I've seen this problem before. How did I solve it? In what project was it? And there's just a lot going through your head. And unless you're pair programming or something, you're not talking out loud. So when I sat down to record these videos, I hated the sound of my voice. I couldn't even put a full sentence together sometimes to explain what I was thinking and what I was doing, because it's just not something I was used to doing. So it took me a very long time. And I forced myself to record 15 minutes a day because I hated it. And I knew I was never going to record if I didn't just do something, even if I threw it away. So it was a real struggle to even put the first 15 videos together.
Chris, I've been doing this for over 10 years. I still can't just talk into the camera on my own. Even if someone says, Andrew, we're flying you out to our conference. We're putting you up in a really nice suite. We want you to just do interviews at the conference. Would you please create a 60-second video saying that you're coming out to the conference? I just can't do it. It's a pain. I get stuck. The hard part for me is just talking to myself. Even great speakers. I remember that Bill Clinton used to have to do the weekly radio address from the Oval Office. He couldn't do it. They brought people into his office to sit down as he talked, and that brought him to life. And here's a person whose whole life is about talking. For me, I bring my wife in. I bring someone who's a stranger in on Zoom. I do something. I got to talk to someone else. So that's one of the problems. And I could see you broke it down by chunking it into 15-minute increments. But what about the other part? How do you know what to put in? Is this making sense? Is it taking people through a step-by-step process that they understand?
Yeah, that is tough. And I definitely have that same problem of it's really hard to talk to myself. So I kind of just imagine that I'm talking or explaining it to one of my friends. And yeah, there's so many layers in programming of, can I assume they understand this or this? And there's so many foundations. So one thing I realized was when I was watching Railscast in the past and learning, there were a lot of things that were glossed over where it was a lot of programming videos, they tell you what to type and they don't explain the why.
Yeah.
So I try and go a little bit overboard and go explain a lot more than you're used to probably. I don't want it to feel scripted like a lecture or anything. I want it to feel like you and I are sitting down programming together and we're just talking it out as we go. So I tend to kind of over explain stuff where if there's something that we're not going to dive into completely, I'll just talk about roughly the concept of what that does and how it gets us to where we need to go. And then I'll, go through and, get through whatever topic we're talking about.
So what I'm hearing you say is you use what was existing before, Railscast, as a model, but you adjusted it based on what you wish he'd have done to make it more interesting for you. So you're not starting from scratch. You're just improving what you were already experiencing. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because there was countless times where I'd watch a video of his and I'd be able to copy paste what he created. And while he's explaining it, it seems like I understand it. But then when it comes time to change it, which every single time, you can't build a feature without tweaking it. So if you copy paste from Stack Overflow or something, you've got to change it to work in your use case. Mm-hmm. And that's where I realized most of these tutorials are not explaining the behind the scenes, the stuff in the dark corners that people gloss over. I wanted to try and shine a light in there and be like, it's not that scary. It just does these things for you and you didn't realize it.
I know what you mean. Like, even for podcasters, they'll talk about the mic to get and then they say, get a mixer and plug it in. They never stop and say, here's why you need a mixer instead of getting a mic that plugs directly into your computer. Just take a second. Tell me why every part matters. All right. So you did it. Other people were charging $100. You said, I'm not there yet. I'm going to charge how much?
Yeah, I think the course was like $39 originally. I had the GoRail site with a few articles on it before. That was getting shared and getting a bunch of traffic organically. And I just tried to put links in the sidebar to get people to come to the homepage, which I converted into like, here's the course sales page. So I was just trying to take those people who are, you know, discovering me from other articles I wrote.
Yeah.
And say, maybe if they're interested in that and they learn something, they'll check out other things that I have. And that was kind of just how I drove people.
How well did you do that first year?
First year, I think I maybe made $6,000.
The whole year?
Best. The whole year. Yeah.
Why didn't you give up on this? Why didn't you say, all right, I did it. I tried it. I'm done. Let's go back to work.
That's pretty much what I did at a point. So I ran out of savings, or was going to run out of savings around September. And in May, I believe, was when the first course launched. And I made, I don't know, $200 in May and July, or June and maybe July. And at that point, I decided selling courses is not going to work because I don't know how to do the marketing. And no one knows who I am. So I don't have any credibility. You're not going to buy these courses without learning other things from me. Yeah. So I decided I'd change what I'm doing and do the weekly screencasts, which were just like Railscast back in the day. And people really missed that. He doesn't seem like he's coming back. So maybe I can, you know, offer my version of that. So I charge $9 a month for weekly screencasts. And the comments on that change were, you know, pretty funny because there are people who are like, oh, this is amazing. I miss Railscast. Like, I'm happy to give you $9. And then there were all these comments of like, who are you? Nobody knows who you are. Why are you going to charge $9 for this? You don't even have any videos. And I had, you know, I was kind of scared seeing some of those comments because I'm putting myself out there for the first time and, you know, seeing some malicious comments like that, you're like, uh-oh, I hope that this is not the audience that I'm attracting. I want people who are supportive.
Right. It's not that you are hurt that people said, how dare you charge? It's just, you want to know, am I really attracting the wrong person? And then it's hard to shake them off and have them not distract the people who are interested. Mm-hmm. How well did it do?
Well, it was interesting because I started to learn over time to ignore those people. Because it turned out that if anyone learned something from me, then they didn't even question the quality. So I had a terrible mic. I was very monotone. I didn't know how to explain stuff. The quality was awful. So the people who would say those things usually didn't learn anything from me. And then the rest of the people who did started to ask for more stuff. They wanted me to cover other topics. And it started to grow slowly. Definitely anything at $9 a month is going to be pretty slow. So I think around September, it was at $450 a month, somewhere around there.
That's how much you
make. Which is like 45 customers.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Not a ton.
Not bad, but okay.
But at that time, that was roughly the end of my savings because I stopped consulting and making money in January. And by September, I've spent all of my savings and I need to get a job or go back to consulting. And I didn't want to do consulting. I already knew that route. It was just going to be the same thing over and over again. So I decided to apply for a job and try to maybe do GoRails on the side, even though I kind of hated making videos and it wasn't making money. And I just didn't like anything that I had so far.
Why'd you hate making videos? It seems like I thought that once you switched to weekly videos where you're talking about new things that you were starting to get engaged, that you were starting to enjoy it.
Yeah, there was pieces of it. Seeing the results for people was inspiring, you know, that kept me motivated. But like, as someone who's a developer and gets a lot of happiness out of learning new things, teaching is not a good way to get happiness because you're not learning new things.
Because you're teaching the basics that you already knew well enough to share with someone else. Yeah. I see.
Yeah. So you're not doing the thing you love. You're regurgitating the same thing that you take for granted now. And you're trying to figure out what stuff you even take for granted. And it's painful to do that. And it's not super fun, especially if you're working on topics you don't find interesting, like what people are usually asking you for, which is like, how do I upload a picture? You're like, there's a million tutorials on that. I don't really want to do that. And I was doing a lot of that at the beginning. You know, what people were asking for was the easy thing for me to do. And I would just do a lot of that. And it was causing me to be pretty burnt out after 9 months.
Not making money, not doing work you love, not getting a lot of love from your audience. Got it. Did you from the beginning create the private Slack group? I know eventually you increased your price to $19 a month and you started to focus on community too. How long did that take you to get to?
I think that happened somewhere in the second year. So when I ran out of money, I got a job working for a YC startup and moved to New York City, but kept doing Go Rails on the side. And I was there for about a year just doing that, working full time. We're in sort of a similar education sector. And so on the side, I'm doing Go Rails. And I think during that time, I remember very clearly when I raised the prices. My Black Friday sale that year, the second year, was basically this is your last chance to subscribe for $9 a month, because after Black Friday, it's $19 a month. And that was like a big growth in revenue, you know. And these are subscribers, so they know that they got to continue paying, otherwise they lose that price, which is a great thing for me to do around that time, because it was still after about a year and a half or 2 years, it was not making enough to live on. So I was still working full time, but it was starting to creep into, you know, minimum wage territory. So it took quite a long time. But at
why
did
you give up
there,
at that point? Why did you say, you know what, this thing doesn't work, I'm just going to quit it. Let's start something different. I thought this was going to work. It turns out, nah.
Yeah, I didn't give up because there were so many people who found it useful and I was starting to build an audience and I knew that that was going to be useful regardless. And I thought if I did do anything, I would probably still make the videos, but talk about things I wanted to talk about, not what they were asking for. And then worst case, I would just give it all away for free and become like a YouTuber, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, use it to build the audience, but give it all away for free and, you know, work somewhere or whatever. But having that job allowed me to just continue doing that because I didn't have to rely on the income.
Okay.
And after about a year, I left there and it was making like $3,500 a month. And I was like,
great.
No, and that was living in New York City. Good luck.
Yeah.
Right?
Where'd you live in New York City?
What's that?
Where'd you live? What part?
I lived in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn. So it was a ways out there. It was not a great apartment. And, you know, it was to be cheap enough. It was quite a ways away from the train. So every night when it's raining, you got to walk 15 minutes in the rain to get home. And it was just not fun. Right. And I grew up in the Midwest and like no car in New York City was really weird. You know, I can't just go to Target and buy something and carry it home. Like
Uber.
You know, it was weird. So it was quite the lifestyle change, but I took that plunge to move to New York City because my dad, we went on vacation and right after he came back and started to go back to work, he passed out in the shower and my mom called me and was like, your dad's in the hospital. He passed out in the shower. We don't know what is going on. And we were all freaked out. And that was one of those times where I was like, thank God I'm working for myself. And this happened before I went to New York City. So we went up there and found out through some scans that he has colon cancer. And that was tough. So they did the surgery, removed it, and he was supposed to be fine, but he's in recovery and not really getting better. And that was rough. So we got another doctor who came in, did another surgery, and actually fixed it, and he was able to recover. But he had to have a colostomy bag.
More of his colon had to get removed.
Yeah, it was like it was abscessed when it basically just wasn't healing when they sewed it back together.
All right, so then how does this bring you back to New York?
So this whole thing happens and my dad recovers and I'm back at home running out of money, but I've been able to go visit my dad in the hospital for as long as possible, right? I never had to go back. I could work from their house. And I was like incredibly grateful for that freedom. And then when I'm running out of money, I'm like, I could absolutely go back to consulting, but life is super short. So yeah. I've always wanted to live somewhere else.
I see.
I'm going to go apply for a job that, you know, is totally different than what I'm used to. And so I moved to New York City and did that for a year. And I hated it. Like, it wasn't great for me. And yet it was one of those things that I learned an enormous amount of stuff. And GoRails steadily kept growing. And by the time that year in New York City was over, I was making enough to live here in the Midwest. So I moved back and was able to just scrape by. But I could put my full-time focus in then on this that had grown enough to pay rent. And I knew that now, knowing what I learned, being out there for a year working at that company, I could grow it better and faster.
What's one thing that you learned?
So one of my friends that I met there was really good at sales, and he worked at one of your sponsors, Delighted.
And oh, that guy, okay.
Yeah. So he and I became really good friends, and he's in sales. And as a developer, you're always like, salespeople are scammy. You know, they're telling customers that we can build anything that you ask for. And then it comes back to the developers and we're like, we can't do what you told them. And so typically like developers have this like bad feeling of salespeople, but he was telling me and basically saying like, look, you know, your job as a salesperson is to help people solve their problems. It could, hopefully it's the product you're representing and selling. But if it's not, just tell them that and tell them where they can go, you know, use a competitor if it's actually better for them. And I was like, that's really interesting. Like, you don't have to be a bad person to be a salesperson. You just help people. And it's like exactly what I'm doing at GoRails. Like, I'm just helping people solve programming problems. And hopefully I can turn them into videos that solve the same problem for 1,000 people instead of just one-off. And so I realized that I could apply that to my videos and, you know, make it a little bit more targeted, right? Like, I can choose to solve problems in the videos instead of just recording whatever I felt like, which is kind of what I was doing at the beginning.
But how'd you know what problems to solve? How'd you know what videos to create? I was looking at your site from 2017. You had about 300 videos up on the site of you teaching 300 different things. How did you pick out what to create a video about?
Yeah, it is not an easy thing, but a lot of it is people want to replicate, you know, features of Twitter or Facebook, and those tend to be the most popular ones.
How did you know that? Did you go to Stack Overflow and look? Did you go to a Reddit site and see what people were asking about?
As a developer, you were looking up that stuff, and so I started to take note of what I was searching for. And when I'm building an app, I'm looking up that stuff to see how other people solve the problem. And then I would take notes and then I'd be like, when I figure this out, I'll make a video on it. And then I was also keeping track of the comments where people were like, you know, hey, I need to upload photos. How do I do that? And I would just kind of aggregate the comments and group them together and figure out what are people asking for? And then how important are those problems? Because some people who want to implement Stripe payments, those people are probably willing to pay a lot more for that.
Right.
Versus a simple thing where it's like, I want to add likes to posts. it's kind of simple, and you know, they're probably, it's not probably something they're as willing to pay for. Someone who's trying to make money, they're going to spend a little bit of money to make money.
And that helps me understand too why on Jumpstart you explain that you have templates to help people build things that have already been built a lot, and you explain it by showing how to add Stripe payments, even though you have other things you could have talked about. All right, I'm with you. Let me take a moment to talk about my second sponsor, Delighted, and then we'll get into then where the other products came from. How'd you know what else to create? Why hosting? Again, another product that's got so much competition. All right, Delighted. I don't think a lot of people know what Delighted is, but we know we're supposed to check in with people and say, do you even like our products? Like this guy, Andy, selling online pants, believe it or not, wanted to figure out if his site was actually working. Did people, never mind, did it close more sales? You could see whether a change in your site results in more sales. What he wanted was, he wanted people to talk about his pants, talk about the experience, tell their friends, if not to get more customers, at least to know that they liked it enough that they would. So Andy said, how do I figure that out? He could have absolutely created a questionnaire on his site that asked people, what do they think? How happy were they? How likely were they to share with their friends? He said, you know what? Screw that. Went to Delighted, delighted.com, signed up for one of their forms, and they make it super easy. You pick the form, the design, the questions, make it look nice, and understood that he could put it in email, on his website, et cetera, and have Delighted make sense. And it turns out the change that he was making was actually leading people not just to lose sales, forget that, more importantly, to not like the experience. So he ripped out this thing that he and his team built and removed it, and shares and conversation went up. And Andy's business grew up to be Bonobos, which we now know is the pant company that is talked about tremendously and has been sold. So the point I'm making is, if you want to get a beat on what your customers are feeling, get a sense of whether they like your product enough to share it, get a sense of whether what you're doing is on the right track, anyway, you want to ask people. If you were running a coffee shop, you'd kind of get a read of the room by looking at people's faces or asking them. You can't do it online. The way to do it is to go to delighted.com/Mixergy and use their tools to quickly and easily ask your audience. More importantly, they help you make sense of the feedback that you get from it. Now, this guy Tam worked for me. I saw him on a Facebook group saying, hey, does anyone know a competitor to Delighted? I really like Delighted, but I don't have the budget right now to pay for Delighted for this project that he's working on. I quickly went into the comments and I said, yeah, I do. Go to delighted.com/Mixergy and you don't have to pay. I did it. I haven't had to pay a cent for it. And if you go to delighted.com/Mixergy for a limited time, you won't either. You just go there. Yes, they will ask you for your credit card and they haven't charged me. They're not going to charge you. They want to make sure you're not spamming. So they need something to connect this free account to a real human being, because you can't send an email. You can't do things like that with it. And if you like it, you'll use it. You can use it for free. If you want to upgrade, get more questions out there, get feedback from more people, then you can level up. But I'm telling you, go jump on this before they get rid of this free offer. It's delighted.com/Mixergy, delighted.com/Mixergy. And if you're listening to an older version of this interview, if you came back months later, I'm sorry, that offer is gone. All right, delighted.com/Mixergy. Go use it while this is up there. How'd you know what to do next, Chris?
There was a point where I had grown revenue enough that I was making, I just broke like six figures, and I started optimizing for working as little as possible. So if I'm making a video, I only need to publish one video a week. And if I can teach something I already know well, I only have to work like one day a week. So I was really doing, at one point, I realized I was doing like a 4-hour work week, literally. And that was awesome.
You were doing it, why? Because you were burning out, or because this was the better way to grow?
Yeah, no, I was doing it because I was burning out.
Burning out. This was the way to survive.
Minimize the amount of effort I had to do, because it is exhausting to record videos and teach stuff that you don't know. You've got to spend, so on some topics, I have to spend 40 hours practicing, you know, building this thing that I've never done before, that I have to teach myself and learn the things not to do so that I can teach you the right way to do it, right? And that's really time consuming. And that's one of the reasons why the guy who was doing Railscasts before me burned out and he stopped doing that. And I was afraid of doing the same thing. Like, I knew it was coming And I was exhausted recording videos every single week. And I was like afraid of committing to do that, which is why I did the courses at the very beginning, because I didn't want to commit to a weekly thing forever.
Yeah.
So once I got to that point, I was making, you know, a good salary for being in the Midwest and working very little. And I started to enjoy that for a while. And then, of course, as you know, most people are, they get bored and they're like, what's the next thing? I'm ready to like work on another challenge. So it turned out that one of the most popular articles that I'd written on Go Rails before the videos was how to deploy your Rails app. And I keep that tutorial up to date in case anything changes. I just, you know, update it every time a new Mac version comes out and so on. So it's always there to reference. And we have two guides, one to set up your computer and one to deploy it to a server. And the deployment guide is like really popular. And one of my friends was telling me like, why don't you just automate that and sell it? And I was like, that's a good point, because to set up my own server for my own apps, I go through and do it all manually, following my own guide, and I can keep an idea on like, is it working or not? But it's like a 45-minute process, and then you do it, things work for a while. 6 months later, some things changed and it doesn't work anymore, and you got to go figure that out. And it's 6 months that's went by. So you forgot all those steps that you took to set it up in the first place. And we got talking, and this guy who gave me the idea was one of the GoRails customers. And, you know, so I was like, that's a great idea. Like, why not take the popular tutorial and just turn it into a product? And that was what we ended up doing. And that became Hatchbox and became another pretty significant piece of revenue, but also like an enormous amount of maintenance that I didn't realize I was getting.
It's half your time now goes to that product, right?
Yeah. It's quite a critical thing for anybody who's deploying their app. You don't want your website to go down. So like, you have to be pretty on the ball with support whenever something happens.
Isn't there already competition in that space? Tons of it?
There is. There's Heroku's probably the big one. There's, you know, AWS services, but similar to AWS and DigitalOcean, those are all like, we're going to give you the raw servers. You can log in, set it up how you want. And that takes a lot of time sometimes. And so that also gets very expensive, either with time or with, you know, you're paying Heroku to do a lot of the server setup for you. And then it becomes quite expensive to run little hobby projects and stuff. So I was always deploying to my own servers because I can do them on DigitalOcean for $5. And to set up that server was like, you know, a few hours the first time you do it, then things break and you got to do that 6 months later. And that just is a never-ending process of maintaining that. So turning this product into something that we can set up your server in 10 minutes, you don't do anything. We'll let you deploy your apps to it. You don't have to worry about any of that either. You can basically use the cheapest option and host as many apps as you want on that server. And it can be way cheaper for, you know, hobby projects and everything. I'm not trying to be, you know, AWS or anything big. I'm just like, there's a lot of people out there who want to run lots of little ideas that they've put together,
yeah,
but they don't want to pay $50 a month for each one of those.
Do you have an example of something that's been built on your platform on Hatchbox?
Yeah, there's one guy who's doing some genomics software, which is pretty cool. So he's got lots of genomics data and processing that he does. And that's like something interesting that would be very expensive to host somewhere else. And he can kind of optimize his costs there, because genomics data can get into terabytes pretty easily.
You know, I was wondering, with Go Rails, you kind of have the model that I have where you're creating everything and you get to keep all the revenue. I wonder if I, Mixergy Premium, if I made a mistake, if the better approach would have been for me to say, I don't have to teach everything and I don't even have to help people teach. I just do my own and then allow anyone else who's good at something to come on the platform and teach. And what we should create is a way for them to get paid a percentage of the revenue based on how much we make. In fact, maybe make it killer good in the beginning and say, I'll take 50% of the revenue, even though I have the vast majority of the content, and I'll split the other 50% with all the creators who are on the platform. And if it's only one creator, great. He gets or she gets 50% of all the revenue that we get. And it's an incentive for the early people to come on and build on the platform. I wonder if that's a direction you and I both should have taken.
Yeah, it's interesting. There is, in the JavaScript development world, there's a company called Egghead. And you may have talked to Joel before.
Yep, I did.
And they do a lot of that, where originally it was him and the co-founder, I think, creating content. And now they have a really easy way to get new instructors on. And then they pay royalties based upon whatever percentage of views watched that month was on your content, which is pretty cool. I definitely thought about that. But then there's a... You have to have your standards enforced somehow. Like your quality of content, you want to make sure is still roughly that quality.
Yep.
That gets harder. And then also, you know, your payments out to all those creators are going to be quite a little complicated thing for your accountant to deal with. And so I just kind of...
But there are tools to do it. My sense is, as I hear you do this, there are tools for sending out revenue. I just talked to a potential sponsor who said, well, you're going to have to use this one tool. I said, why? He said, we can't deal with all these different companies. We don't want to deal with payments. The payments come from this one company. They handle all the stuff that you were just talking about. Like 1099s alone could be a pain in the butt, right? Mm-hmm. But there are companies that handle it. My sense, listening to your answer and watching you as you talk about it, is you don't want to go big. You even told Ari, our producer, I want to see how long I could go without even hiring anybody. Can I just keep it small enough so I don't have the headache, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been really curious. I don't know why exactly, but I've been really curious how far I can take it with a single employee myself. And that is something that you see, you know, Apple with however many millions they make per employee. And then you've got companies like Boeing and stuff. And you're like, there's so much bureaucracy in these companies. How do they make that much money that they can just throw away all this money and wasted time and meetings and all this stuff? And that always had me kind of curious of like, how big can I get things on my own? And so I've just kind of been going that route. I probably will have to hire someone to continue.
Because you're hitting a breaking point. You're doing well. Yeah. And my sense also watching you, talking to you before, is you kind of go between near burnout to I can't believe this is working and I'm doing this thing that I love. Near burnout, I can't, right?
Yep. It feels like a swing back and forth on that all the time. The biggest taxing thing right now is the support for production apps on your hosting, right? Like that is critical stuff for every customer of yours. So you need to be on the ball. In the past, that
middle,
has been
middle of the night, people will contact you.
Yeah, like 11:30 p.m. as you're heading to bed. You might be in bed checking your phone before you fall asleep.
Yep.
And then you're like, oh no, customer side is down. Now I have to get up, I have to go downstairs and, you know, debug this thing that may or may not be my fault. And, you know, it is what it is. And it's exhausting. And then to hire someone to help out with that, you need someone, at least with hosting, you need someone who's like a very good expert. And then they need to be, you know, at the other side of the world, because you really want to be 24-hour coverage. And then you have to deal with paying someone in a different country and it gets complicated. So I've been trying to intentionally stay small, just see where I can make it, you know?
I wonder if there's a service that would get you that. Like, I'm not promoting them now, but TopTal is clearly one of my sponsors. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they've got somebody the other side of the world just gets paid when they do the work. You know, they're reliable because they do this for another company that's similar. I hear you. The headache of having to bring in somebody new, I understand why Basecamp keeps saying, wait till you absolutely have to before you hire. But I'm also seeing from you that when you get to burnout, what do you feel? Do you want to just stay in bed?
Oh yeah. There's lots of that. Lots of, should I just shut this down or sell it and, you know, get my time back? Mm-hmm. It is tough. And I feel like one of the reasons why I want to see how profitable I can get things on my own was working at that company in New York City for a year. I watched them spend like $40,000 a month on ads, and they, you know, had investment, and we were just spending money outrageously and not making money. And I was like, I'm going to never do that. So I've maybe went in the other extreme, but yeah, the burnout portion of trying to do that is not worth it. But then once you start to make enough money, you don't have to. And I'm at that point of where I've probably gone too far and I should have reinvested more of that into, you know, help to go further or to make my life
make
easier.
Sure you had enough money in the bank to cover it. Right. You were telling me before we got started.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have enough money? Is it inappropriate to ask you how much you now have in the money in the bank for Go Rails?
Yeah, I'm not going to share that exactly, but I have enough to easily cover me and someone else full time. And hopefully that continues to grow monthly. And yeah, I wanted to make sure that before I hired someone full time, I didn't want to do it too soon. Like, I don't know, you know, and I'm sure this is a conversation that I should be having with other founders, but when you hire your first person, you don't want to hire them too soon and realize, we had a bump in the road and we're going to have to lay this person off for a month, or I'm going to have to go without a salary for a month, you know, 6 months in. That would suck. So I wanted stability there and to just, you know, have enough growth that I know that if I'm hiring someone that they're covered and it's not going to be a problem. Hopefully Chris, that person doubles.
You are not a risk taker. That's the thing. Now I understand earlier why it was so hard for you to leave your consulting job.
Yeah.
Like a lot of entrepreneurs would say, I got an opportunity. I'm growing. I'm getting attention. Did the Indie Hackers post that you did where you shared that you hit your $1 million in revenue from this business, did that bring you a lot of new customers?
Blades. I have no idea.
You don't
honestly
know.
I don't track
did
it.
Did that month grow in sales any more than any other?
Maybe. But that's not necessarily my customer base. I share that more because to me, like if I'm teaching stuff to the version of me from 4 years ago, these were the kind of posts that like got me to want to build my own business, right?
To know it was possible.
So that was why I ended up sharing that. It was like, I don't have any idea if any of these people are going to go be customers, but I wanted to share this because it's possible, you know, and I would have liked to seen that a few years ago. And I don't think I ever thought I would get to this point on my own. So it was cool to do that.
Jumpstart Rails. Where did that idea come from?
Actually, Ruby on Rails is a framework to build websites. And then in PHP, there's Laravel, and they have this template that has payments and all these things built in. And something that I've struggled with over the years is building apps and having payments and all these features that you kind of need. And I do them from scratch every single time. And that leads to every single app being totally different than the last one. I've learned a bunch of stuff. And I changed the way I do it, or I just did it differently just because I wanted to try something new. And over the years, I've learned a lot of mistakes from that. And seeing them build a template that I know Taylor Otwell, the creator of Laravel, posted on Reddit that he'd made $1 million from that. And that was one of the things where I was like, that's really surprising. And it's also sad that we don't have anything like that in Rails. And it needs to also be affordable. So he was selling that in Laravel for like $100. So I was like, what if we make that for Rails and try and make it affordable as well? So Jumpstart ended up being $150 and it's got, you know, payments and all these other features that you pretty much need in every single site. Like if you're building Mixergy Premium from scratch, you've got to build your memberships and the payments, then, you know, failed payment emails, and maybe you need Teams because you want to sell a package of licenses or whatever. Yeah. Lots of features that you have to build. And so I ended up building all of that into kind of the thing that I would use to rebuild Go Rails or Hatchbox or any of my own apps So I was kind of building it for myself to save time in the future. And then it was like, if I package it up and sell it, maybe it'll help other people too. And it turned out to sell really well. And it's kind of like a quarter of revenue now. And I didn't expect that, especially from something that everything else I've done before is SaaS. So it's monthly subscriptions. This is a gamble on a one-time payment. Will that just die off? I don't know. So I thought I would try that and see what happened.
You know, the one piece that seems missing from your business is like the on-ramp. Yes, there's a forum and SEO for articles, and Stack Overflow seems to send you traffic, but you're not at all aggressive about getting email addresses, right? There isn't that people come do this, you get their email address, and then naturally there's a progression to sales. It's the bottom of the forum. There's a want to stay up to date with Ruby on Rails, enter your email address. You've always been good about saying, here's the number of people who are on the list. That social proof has always been good.
Yep.
I think even looking back at your early website, you had it up on the homepage. But there isn't this natural flow from watching something to being asked for an email address, right?
Yeah, that's kind of intentional, because going back to the very beginning of GoRails, nobody knew who I was. So I was first trying to teach you anything. And then if I taught you something, then you trust me, then you'll give me your email address. And it also is a natural filter to, you know, get those people who actually care. They're the ones who have gone and watched 5 or 10 minutes of a video. And then they're like, oh, I want to keep, you know, seeing more of this. And I'm sure I could be more pushy with that and have like the exit, you know, when you move your cursor to the back button and have the pop up and whatever. But, you know, I just haven't been too worried about that. I'm more worried about, can I help people in the community? Because if I can do that, then they're willing to support me. And that's like the philosophy I've taken with it. Just building trust with people and trying to help as many people as I can.
It's a good place to leave it, because that is what I keep seeing here. You're almost apologetic about asking for email addresses. You're very clear. Like, if I want to join the discussion, it's not a natural, all right, now enter your email address. Now I got you. It's go create an account. And that's a barrier to collecting an email address when you tell people to create an account. But I could see how if someone's really into your work, it makes it a natural next step for them. All right. I feel like the first place anyone who's listening to us would want to go is to gorails.com, right?
Yep. Yeah, that would be kind of the source of everything. That's where I do most of my work. And then it's got links to Hatchbox or Jumpstart or whatever, if you're interested.
I also think that, have you gotten investor emails, investor calls? I feel like you should get a bunch of them.
Yeah, I've gotten a few, and an acquisition offer at one point, or the discussion of it. And, you know, it is one of those things where it's like, unless it's going to mean that I don't have to work for the rest of my life, like, it's not really that appealing yet. So it's a weird feeling to be in, where I'm like, you know, I've gotten 6.5 years down the road, and now it's grown to significant revenue every year, more than working at Google or something. They can be pretty good about some of those packages they offer, but I don't have any like interest in going and doing that anymore. So there's like, yeah, maybe if someone threw you $10 million, then you'd be like, okay, now we're talking.
I don't feel you're there. I feel like you're at a point where maybe investment would help, but you're also at a place where if you're willing to just suffer, then you may not need the investment.
Mm-hmm.
But you hit on something. You hit on a community of people who trust you, who know you. You've invested a lot of time in cultivating them. You know the problems and the needs that they have, and you've proven that you could create products for them. This is just, it's a wonderful business.
Yeah, it's been interesting, because Rails used to be a lot more popular when Basecamp was first getting started. And over the years, there's a lot of people asking, is Ruby and Rails dead? And are anybody ever going to, like, will anybody use this in the future? Everybody's moving to JavaScript or whatever Facebook is using these days. And that worried me for a long time of like, am I investing a lot of time and effort into a community that is just shrinking? And like, will this business just naturally die because no one's here anymore? And it's pretty amazing to see that was definitely wrong. But also, like, the community just wants someone to take the reins and start making cool stuff and sharing that and teaching it and whatever. So in a sense, I'm kind of hopefully filling those shoes of the people who came before me creating Railscast and other tools like that, you know, and rebuilding part of the community that I feel like has waned or was lost over the years.
Yeah, I do see the lack of enthusiasm in the beginning of Mixergy. It was Rails was such a thing to that. Frankly, I didn't understand enough how to talk about it in interviews, but I could tell that people were talking about it, that there was a lot of passion there. It was Basecamp, and then it was also Twitter, right? The Twitter mm-hmm. was almost the high point and the warning for people.
Yeah.
Will that was one that the way that Twitter did in the early days.
Yeah. And I think Twitter blamed Rails for a lot of things that were their own fault. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of negative press for something it didn't really deserve, because at the same go, Airbnb, GitHub, Shopify, giant websites, they're all using Ruby and Rails and doing just fine, you know? So it is what you do with the technology. You may want to blame it for your problems, but it's probably, you just need to go like, actually understand what you're doing. And maybe it's not the right solution for what you're doing. Twitter's a unique case. Like that is a very, very high traffic site. So it is a little bit different than, you know, other things, but
it's also a unique company that we've seen has had other issues.
Yeah.
Both Hatching Twitter, the book, is so good at talking about mm-hmm. some of those issues, but frankly, we still see it to this day. All right. So the site gorails.com. And I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. These free access software is not going to last long. Basically, they're introducing my audience to their software. So if you want to know what content to create, how your content is doing compared to other people, just spot, there's so many great stories of SEM Rush. I'm just going to tell you, if you're listening to me, go try it for free, explore, put your domain in, go see what it can do for you by going to mixergy.com/SEM Rush. And if you want to get a beat on how your audience is feeling, go to delighted.com/Mixergy. And I'm grateful to them for sponsoring. And to you, Chris, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Bye, everyone.